What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Live Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fabiano, and Graham Barfield. And so we come back from Indy, and the weather here in Los Angeles might be worse than it was in Indianapolis.
It won't friggin' stop raining. It won't stop raining. I get people are going to come in and say, oh, third world problems. But I haven't been able to play golf ever since the end of the damn football season because it just won't stop raining.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
I mean, for the people who are getting frozen out in ice storms and everything else, they have, you know, no compassion. But this sucks if you live in Southern California and you're not used to this.
I think that's the biggest thing is, like, I've lived in states where it's been freezing cold and I would much rather have 50 and rainy than 2 and snow.
Although then when you factor in how poorly the people drive here.
Yeah. I was just talking to my good buddy, Justin Bailey, who works over at Action Network. And he lives in Minneapolis and they got 8 inches of snow last night, supposed to get another 12 on Saturday. So
yikes.
I can't complain too much.
Although we had thunder and lightning last night. That's always fun.
That was legit. Yeah.
You don't get that on the West Coast very often.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it was legit. In fact, I think a flight going from LAX to like Seattle, I think, had to come back because it got hit by lightning.
Oh, dude.
They had to turn around and go back to LAX last night.
So
that was kind of rough. We will talk plenty of free agency stuff because that gets going next week. But forget all the football stuff. We're going to talk Game of Thrones on this.
Yeah, buddy.
We're going to do all that. Before we get to any of that, go behind the glass. Our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy Esquire, is hanging out there. What's up, Murph?
Well, it's good to be back from Indy with you guys. It was a fun trip. And I will say, Indy might have the upper hand here in L.A. because everything in downtown Indy is connected by a tunnel.
Yep.
So we wouldn't even be touched by the snow or the rain or whatever there is. So how to build those.
Was it good, man? I've been moving for like the last week and I'm still not done.
It wasn't bad.
I'd rather have been there freezing my butt off.
Off air, me and Mark were talking before about how of a strange event it is because fans show up but fans are not allowed to eat in the stands, cheer, use like their cell phones. It's a very almost like militant style event that's going on. But that being said, seeing these guys up close, I mean, it was pretty cool and it was great hanging with the guys.
It was almost like wasn't there a baseball game, Marcus, like a couple of years ago that they played in front of no crowd at all?
Oh yeah, it was Baltimore.
It was
Orioles.
Baltimore, right?
The Orioles played one.
Kind of like that, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember what was going on, but they had to play it in front of no crowd, which was weird because I watched it. I remember watching it streaming, and it was it was like I was intruding on something.
Right.
I'm not supposed to be here.
Right, exactly. So we got plenty to talk about, but first, let's do some news.
The news.
All right. Milk Mustache, Antonio Brown. He may be traded this week. There are a lot of teams, some teams in the running, some teams have dropped out. I hear the Raiders might be a front runner.
That's such a Raiders move. It's such a Raiders move.
Of all the issues the Raiders, I mean, look, they have issues at wide receiver too. I feel like this doesn't necessarily solve their problems, but he'll be a target monster there.
I mean, I think a lot of people maybe thought Gruden was just trying to tear it down by trading Mac, trading Cooper, getting first-round picks for them. Wouldn't that just... I mean, it kind of seems like he's just like kind of aimlessly shooting here if they truly are going after Antonio Brown.
Yeah. I mean, the good news is, though, by the time next season starts, Antonio will be 31, so that means he's just old enough, I think, to play for John Gruden right now.
And Antonio Brown in Oakland, he's not going to be in my top five wide receivers.
He has just hit the threshold to be old enough to play for John Gruden. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. I don't know. The Antonio Brown saga has been...
Marcus,
whatever.
Are you tired of talking about Antonio Brown? I can't tell.
Him and his milk mustache. Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray news, obviously there was plenty of it in Indianapolis. The rumors going around that he looks like the number one overall pick. There's talk that Josh Rosen is on the trade block now, that they may be moving him around. So because Kyler Murray is the number one pick, and because this is football, and because somehow football is the only sport where this works, you become the consensus number one overall pick, and then for the next 6 weeks, we're going to tear you down in any single way possible. Charlie Casserly said that his combine week wasn't good, that he doesn't show leadership, he can't read a defense, he does bad board work, and now the latest, I don't know if you heard the latest, of Inflategate, that apparently his height and weight were inflated at the combine is the latest rumor that is circulating.
The whole point of the combine is to not have these types of
discussions. I know.
I mean, And to that point about like him not being good at the combine, then why are so many freaking teams interested in him?
Why, yeah, I feel like this is all.
There have been some people, and I love Charlie Cashley. He's my guy. But there have been some people out there who have, including some people in this building, who have strongly disagreed with what he had said.
Look, I mean, I don't think you win a Heisman Trophy and not know how to read a defense or be able to do board work. For the next 6 weeks, I think the best piece of advice is trust nothing that you read or hear.
In life, always, right?
But especially the next 6 weeks, because you're going to hear so many things about these top prospects. I always go back to my favorite with Marcus Mariota, where he has no red flags, and that is a red flag. Like that to me sums up the draft season. So Kyler Murray, sorry about your luck, man. You're going to get picked apart over the next 6 weeks.
And did you see like the whole like Twitter thing with OBJ? He did like the laughing crying emoji, and then like the zip over the lip emoji, and then Murray, I believe, responded and said likewise, or it was something like that. So it seems like he's going to be the number one overall pick. He'll be Cliff Kingsbury's project, and then that means Josh Rosen's going to be traded, and Giants, anyone? I mean, they were in on him last season. Miami Dolphins could also be a potential trade partner.
Yeah, I mentioned the Dolphins last week with Marcus and the combine. I think that's the one that makes, I think, the most logical sense. They have the 13th overall pick. It's kind of similar range where Rosen went the year before. There was a rumor that the Cardinals were saying that they can only get a third-round pick from him. That is just total BS.
That's crazy.
That is just total BS.
I will say this, though. From a fantasy perspective, his best landing spot long-term would be the Giants, because you've got Odell Beckham Jr. and Saquon Barkley in that offense. That would be
I still think that would
be great for him.
I don't want to speak for Eddie, but I think Giants fans are holding out for Haskins still.
I think that's the idea, right?
The interesting thing is, though, Haskins, I think, across like the fan base would agree, taking him at six makes the most sense. That being said, if you give up, I know you just said a third-round pick is ridiculous, but let's just say if that is the case, I know Bucky Brooks has heard from some executives that there's no value now in Rosen because everyone knows the Cardinals are taking him. So if they could be like, here's a third, I'd even do a second and a fourth. Now you get Rosen, but at six you pick one of those defensive monsters who we saw up close. It's hard to argue against that.
Honestly, at this point, if the Cardinals truly can only get a second or third, they should just hold on to Rosen for a year.
Yeah.
And see
what happens. You would now have two quarterbacks on rookie deals.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That would probably be $15 to $16 million in between both of them. I don't know what Murray's deal would look out to be. That's still like in the bottom 10 or 15 in the league in terms of quarterback, in terms of money spent on quarterbacks.
Remember back in the day?
So why would you take 30 cents on the dollar after you just spent, they had to move up to get him too. They had to trade a third and a fifth round pick to get up to get him too.
So remember back in the day when these quarterbacks were out of college and they were just banking? Like, Bradford. It was
Matt
insane.
Stafford.
Right.
Matt Stafford.
Yes.
He pounded the coach.
By the way, Haskins was working out with Evan Engram at UCLA, I believe, yesterday. So it seems like the Giants players already seem to want him over, I guess, Rosen or anyone else.
Oh, there you go.
Well, Miami could be a trade partner as well. There's a few teams out there that could need a quarterback. How about the Redskins?
Those seem like equally bad situations to what Josh Rosen would be leaving in Arizona. I mean, Washington's not good. Miami, we've already talked about never Dolphins. I mean, that. Mm-hmm. None of this seems to help Josh Rosen. Not that the Cardinals are out necessarily to help Josh Rosen, but this doesn't help Josh.
I don't know that there's a destination that would make him a draftable asset in fantasy next season.
No. He just keeps getting screwed. I mean, Jim Morris screwed him.
Yeah.
Mike McCoy screwed him.
Yep.
Cardinals are, I guess, ostensibly
so
about
now
to
Kingsbury
move on.
Is going to.
Yeah.
Because Kingsbury wants Kyler.
Oh, Cliff. There mm-hmm. you go. Staying in the NFC West, the Rams reportedly, according to general manager Les Snead, they will monitor Todd Gurley's workload in 2019. We have heard the stories about arthritis in his knee, that apparently it is worse than the Rams were letting on. The interesting part of this story to me is sort of the disconnect between what Les Snead is saying and sort of how Sean McVay has approached it, because he's had such a blue skies attitude about it. Like, oh, Todd's feeling good. You know, he's going to be okay. We're going to work with him, whatever. Although he did slip in a comment about having kind of a Batman and Robin situation, which suggests that they're going to start using someone else to kind of help give Gurley some rest. I guess the only thing I can think about this is that, you know, if this is true, this kills the chance of Todd Gurley being the number one.
I have Saquon number one. Top five, maybe, Marcus.
Yeah, I mean, I think he still ends up top five.
If the Rams re-sign C.J. Anderson and go into the preseason with this notion of a Batman and Robin scenario, is Gurley still worth a top five pick? There's a lot of good young running backs in the league, boys. A lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, the question is,
how much does it scare you?
Well, it scares you, but I think, you know, when they say monitoring his workload, I think there's still a question of, like, how much. Like, obviously, he's not going to be the workhorse he was before, but he's still going to be the centerpiece of that offense, and I still think, you know, I mean, I don't know.
Let's not forget the Rams just paid Gurley a buttload of money.
I know.
They still have a lot of time left and money on that contract that they can't get out of, at least for this season.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I feel sorry for him that he has arthritis. I feel sorry that he probably might need stem cell treatment at some point in his career, but man, like, That deal is going to look pretty bad if Gurley's not the centerpiece of their offense. Mm-hmm. And getting 380 touches and playing 80% of snaps.
Yep.
Well, and then the question becomes then, who is the other running back? We're going to talk free agents. We'll get to C.J. Anderson in a little bit. He may not be back. We'll see if it's, you know, Malcolm Brown. We'll see if it's John Kelly. Who knows? But that's going to be one to keep an eye on. More running back news in the NFC West. Man, they're busy on that side. Mm-hmm. Pete Carroll says he views Chris Carson and Rashad Penny as a 1-2 punch.
Right.
Don't like to hear that.
No.
I mean, I guess that's sort of kind of how it was trending by the end of last year anyway. And with the price they paid, you know, trading to get Rashad Penny at the end of the first round, I had the feeling that they were going to give him every opportunity to win that job this year. But and I would rather have it just, you know, they have a competition and one guy wins it instead of this potential right. two-headed monster, but it seems like that's where we're going.
I guess it's better than 1-1A, right? 1-2, I don't know, man. Like,
sure.
And Carson was tremendous, dude. I mean, broken tackles in terms of what he could do on the ground, red zone threat. But the fact of the matter here is that the Seattle Seahawks took a first-round pick in Rashad Penny last year. And as Marcus mentioned, they're going to give him every opportunity to earn as many carries as he can, regardless of what Carson did this past season.
Yeah, I mean, Carson only saw 24 targets in 14 games last year.
Not a pass catcher.
Not a pass
catcher. So, I mean, they have to have, just by de facto, Chris Carson can't catch. They've got to have a catcher.
Right.
So, I mean, look, as long as they remain as run-heavy as they were, then, you know, maybe there is some value in both those guys there, because obviously the Seahawks ran the ball a ton, and they ran it effectively.
Yep.
And on top of that, Russell Wilson wasn't necessarily the one running the football. So, you know, if that continues, both those guys maybe have some sort of value next season. Duke Johnson is reportedly drawing trade interest, which, you know, you figured kind of had to happen, right? I mean, you know, they obviously found something with Nick Chubb. They bring in Kareem Hunt, although we wait to see when he will be available to them, you know, pending any sort of league suspension or what have you. But it just, you know, Duke Johnson was increasingly the odd man out there, Graham. And this is a guy that I loved coming out of Miami. He just was never a great fit in Cleveland there. Yeah.
You and I talk about this all the time. It's like Duke Johnson's great in theory, but they just continually don't know how to use him every year.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah. I mean, they gave him a nice little extension last year, too. Mm-hmm. You're all kind of like, yeah, he'll just come back. He'll catch 5-6 balls per game and kind of, you know, be a fine little PPR player. But
yeah, I would think the Browns, though, they do need to have some insurance at running back, because you would expect that Kareem Hunt is going to be suspended for at least 10 games. Because if the NFL doesn't hand down a suspension of at least 10 games, they're going to get destroyed by the media because of the evidence of what happened. We've seen it. And so if you jettison, Duke, you need to have some sort of backup plan, because you're probably going to be without Kareem Hunt for most of the regular season.
We touched on it when it originally came out, but if Hunt is suspended for 10 games, the Browns then automatically, his contract, he signed a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
It automatically tolls over into 2020. So they basically, if he is suspended for 10 games, they have his contract for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think that's the move John Dorsey had in mind. So it obviously would make Duke Johnson very expendable.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
But would he be expendable for next season?
Yeah.
When they would need that second back?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's no, you know, there's nothing that says they can't go out and maybe draft a guy.
Sure.
Regardless, sure, I'm all for giving Nick Chubb more targets.
Yeah.
Please.
Hey,
please.
Let's make Nick Chubb a thing. I mean, you know, Freddie Kitchens came in and made him a thing.
Oh, he made himself a thing this past season.
Let's keep making him a thing in 2019. So that'll be the slogan. Nick Chubb, a thing in 2019. There you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
Like a That was the news.
All right. The free agency frenzy begins this week. Or I guess next week. Whatever. It's Wednesday. So next week, the free agency frenzy officially begins on NFL Network Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. That is, I think that's sort of when the legal tampering period begins, I guess.
Tamper.
Which, you know, I don't know. Let's just say that's when free agency starts, right? Because, like, they, you know, it's like Sunday, Monday, we'll have all these, like, you know, this team and this player agreed to a deal that, so that when free agency actually opens, like, nothing actually happens because we've already known about everything. So, whatever. Anyway, check out the network Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. That's when everything kind of gets going. And, you know, we'll certainly write about it. We'll talk about it. And I believe there's an NFL Fantasy Live on tap for
yes, sir.
Monday, March 18th. Is when that is set to hit your airwaves. So we'll be on talking about this as well on your television sets and your interwebs. So get ready for that.
It's going to be fun too, man. There could be some big names that we know. Antonio Brown's going to be gone. That's not going to be a free agent move, but Le'Veon Bell, Mark Ingram. So you've got Golden Tate. So it's going to be some. There's going to be some interesting.
It is a really top heavy free agency group.
Yes,
right?
Yes,
very very top heavy.
I'm actually working on the top 30. And Graham, I'd say right after about 7 or 8,
it gets pretty.
It goes downhill.
It gets pretty.
It's sticky.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And even like some of the guys from 5 to 8 are kind of. We'll see.
There you go. So let's go through some of these guys, some of the top-level guys here in free agency. Start at the quarterback position. Nick Foles right now is the marquee name at that position, and. Yeah, he's going to be a free agent, but it seems for all intents and purposes that he is going to Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. The Jaguars seem to have zeroed in on him. It seems like that's going to be the match there. I don't know. Does that do anything for either of you guys, having him as a starter in Jacksonville there?
For me, it's an upgrade for the wide receivers, but a slight one, because Blake Bortles enjoys turning the ball over and throwing the ball to the wrong team, where Nick Foles has actually had a propensity to be a little bit more accurate. Go back to the season where he had 27 touchdowns and 2 interceptions with the Philadelphia Eagles. But Nick Foles is not going to be a draftable asset. And honestly, the bump up in value that any of his wide receivers might gain from him being under center in Jacksonville is not tremendous.
The biggest difference between Foles and Bortles is that Foles can actually throw a spiral. I mean, seriously. John DeFilippo, I think this is kind of why they brought him in. DeFilippo was the offensive coordinator, obviously, during Eagles Super Bowl run, and now I guess they'll get their man.
But they have a very high pick in the first round, though.
They do.
So I'm interested because, like, they're seemingly all in on Foles, but they could potentially get
anytime you think Dave Caldwell will take a quarterback. Since they took Bortles, they haven't done it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they
mm-hmm.
were in prime position to take Lamar Jackson. Mm-hmm. They passed up on Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes 2 years ago. I mean,
they've
done some weird things with their first round.
I think it finally hit them that, we're not getting too much further with Bortles than we've already gotten. So,
well, it's too bad they're 2 years late.
Yes, you're right on
that. You'd rather be 2 years too early than 2 years too late. Teddy Bridgewater is kind of the other big intriguing name in this free agent quarterback class. And you know, obviously, a lot of people, myself included, rooting for a comeback for Teddy after that horrific knee injury a couple of years ago. Now, obviously, for our purposes, I mean, unless he can find a starting job somewhere, I mean, he doesn't necessarily have a lot of fantasy value. So I guess, Graham, that begs the question, can he be a starter? Will he find a team that will allow him to be a starter in 2019?
Yeah, and the one game that we did get was in week 17 against the Panthers, a dead Panthers team, and he only averaged like 5.4 yards per attempt.
Right.
I mean, look, I'm all for a Teddy comeback, but when he's played and been healthy, he's been just average at best, and you know, and now you've got to deal with maybe long-term knee problem. It's just it'll be really interesting to see where he goes. Obviously, we're all pulling for him, but
Redskins could be on him as well.
Man, that seems like a terrible match in the sense that field surface has been so bad. It has destroyed knees left and right. So take a guy who has had major knee problems and put him in that stadium.
Just shredded Darius Geis' knee in a freaking preseason.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it just seems like an awful, awful situation.
Opportunities-wise, it would work.
Yeah, but in terms of
field-wise, well.
Scary. Mm. Running backs. All right, so we've talked about Le'Veon Bell a lot. He's the top. I mean, I don't really know what else to say about him other than he is the top free agent name maybe the top offensive free agent name in this class, but certainly
top
the
free
top,
agent. Yeah, no doubt.
But certainly the top running back, no doubt about that. I don't, you know, like I said, we've talked about him quite a bit. We'll move on. Mark Ingram, though, is interesting, and I know Fabs, you have kind of, you know, lobbied to get him to Baltimore, where he can possibly be right. a workhorse. But that's—I
still love that fit. That's such
that's a good fit, right?
Well, I mean, think about it too. Ty Montgomery is a free agent. Alex Collins, he's a free agent now.
A free agent.
And Buck Allen is a free agent. So you've got Gus Edwards and really not much of anything else. And I know that at the combine,
hey, don't besmirch Kent Dixon.
Oh, stop it. I'm off the Kenneth Dixon thing. Come on. But this is a good fit. And he would end up being a very nice RB2 if he landed in Baltimore with an opportunity to be maybe not a featured back, but pretty damn close. And people forget Ingram is a guy who is very, very good at catching the ball out of the backfield.
And on that same note, I was going to say, unless I'm still crossing my fingers that the Bucs somehow get Le'Veon Bell, but Mark Ingram would also be a great
fit. I was going to say, Tampa
would
score
10 touchdowns for
Philadelphia is another one, too. Yep.
Philly has been in the market for a running back, I feel like, literally 5 years.
Since they got rid of LeSean McCoy.
Ever
since Shady left, I mean, they've kind of been looking for a running back to replace him, and it hasn't really happened. So there you go. CJ Anderson, obviously, you know, was out of football for a good portion of the season, came back at the end of the year. We know how the story went, played very well, helped the Rams get to the Super Bowl. I don't know if he comes back to Los Angeles, though, Fabs. I mean, does what he did last year, does that earn him a spot to be? Cause, I mean, obviously, he still has something left. That's what he showed us. Mm-hmm. Does he get an opportunity next year? And, you know, I guess it's a situation, is the price going to be right for some team to give him a shot next year?
And there's plenty of teams out there that could use him. What's odd is that one of the teams is the Oakland Raiders, who signed him and then
let him go.
Ceremoniously dumped him about a day later. But I haven't talked to CJ lately. I actually have to text him because I want to hear what he's hearing. And I don't know that he's going to give me too much of anything. But the bottom line here is that you're right. CJ did show in basically leading the Rams backfield into the playoffs and then ultimately into the Super Bowl where they lost. But he can be – I don't know if you've got a guy who's going to give you 25 touches in a game. But CJ can get in there and give you somewhere around, you know, 12 to 16 touches per game and give you some effectiveness, no doubt about that. And there are teams out there, and there's a long list of them that could use his services.
We talked about this last week, Marcus. It's that since this rookie running back class is kind of shaky,
it's so
at best.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I do wonder if CJ gets one more shot to be a 1B type player, because what the Panthers brought him in to be.
Mm-hmm. Everyone compared him to who? Jonathan Stewart.
Exactly.
He's the new Jonathan Stewart.
Exactly. And I think in a perfect world, he is like, you give him 150, 160 carries, and he's a 1B type player.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems...
Which is scary. I guess he should come back to the Rams then.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it seemed like he was going to be a great fit in Carolina. It just, for whatever reason, didn't work out. Although I do think, you know, in hindsight, I think the Panthers, if they had their way to do it again, they might have kept him around here just to kind of take some of the pressure off. You know, I think Christian McCaffrey was great last year, no doubt. Yeah. But I think just to take some of that pressure off of him a little bit.
CJ did fit in very well in Los Angeles and you know, gained a very quick rapport with his teammates. And I'm sure that they will be lobbying, including Sean McVay, to potentially bring him back to be insurance. Malcolm Brown, I believe, is a restricted free agent, but assuming he'll be back, I still think C.J. Anderson is clearly an upgrade there at the RB2 spot in L.A.
Moving over to the wide receivers, a thing that you brought up in Indy, Graham, was that with the running backs not performing well, that it helps a guy like Le'Veon Bell in his free agency chase there. On the flip side, the wide receivers, as we talked about, they showed out in a big way as a group. They ran well. They tested very well. All those guys really opened some eyes. John Brown right now might be the top receiver on this free agent market, but with all the wide receivers at the combine testing well, does that sort of work the opposite of the running backs? Does that maybe hurt a guy like John Brown in free agency?
I don't know, man, because it's really just three big names for the receivers, right? And one of them really isn't even a big name, is Tyrell Williams. So it's just John mm-hmm. Brown, Gold yep. Tate, and Tyrell. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I always feel like that the true lid lifters like John Brown have always been a little bit undervalued in this league. Mm-hmm. I still am hoping that he finds a way to make his way to Cleveland or either Green
Bay. You're digging your heels in on that one.
Yeah,
man.
I really
Brown
want
to the Browns.
I really want it. But yeah, I don't know. Just because it's such a light free agent class, like we kind of previously discussed, I don't really know if it hurts him too much.
Yeah, I mean, very curious to see where he ends up, because he is a guy who, like, you know, we saw. I know that his numbers weren't great last season, but when Joe Flacco was there, John Brown was actually, you know, making plays. He was putting up some numbers. It's when Lamar Jackson took
tremendous.
Over that that things changed.
When Flacco was the quarterback, he averaged a career high in yards per game and yards per reception.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Joe Flacco.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yep. So, I mean, you put him somewhere with a quarterback that still has a little juice left, then maybe John Brown goes back to, you know, what we saw that made him fall, that made us fall in love with him back when he was in Arizona. So hopefully that happens. Golden Tate, one of the other guys that you mentioned there, that is one of the top names in this class. I mean, obviously, we have seen in the past Golden Tate go out and perform well. It didn't happen in Philadelphia, and I just wonder, you know, are we left with a bad taste in our mouth because of what happened with the Eagles, Fabs, or do we look back at Golden Tate's history and say, you know what, this guy can still be productive in the right situation?
He was productive last season with Detroit. He averaged, what, almost 10 targets a game, over 6 catches a game, averaged 6.4 yards after catch with the Lions, and then he went to the Eagles and averaged 5.5 targets a game, 3.8 catches per game, and that's where his bread was really buttered in terms of PPR. He'd catch a ton of balls, and he also averaged 5.1 yards after catch, which was not good. In fact, that would be the second lowest total of his career. So get him out of there. I'd love to see him go to Green Bay. That would be a great fit. Randall Cobb is a free agent. I don't know that the Packers are going to bring him back. I mean, selfishly, I'd love to see him go to the Dallas Cowboys and replace Cole Beasley. That would be another weapon in the arsenal there for Dak Prescott. But Golden Tate, to sort of resurrect any fantasy value he might have in 2019, needs to get the heck out of Philadelphia.
I can't imagine if the Cowboys don't want to pay Cole Beasley that they're
going to
want to pay Golden
I know. It's a it's a selfish point of view. It's likely not going to happen, but...
But hey, you got Jason Witten back, though, so, you know.
I know, what's that?
Jason Witten's going to hoover, like, 5 targets per game, average 3 yards per catch, and piss all of us.
Dude, I know. When I saw that come through on Twitter, at first I was like, I mean, I love Jason Witten. He's one of the greatest tight ends. I mean, let's face it, the guy is going to go to the Hall of Fame when he eventually is done playing in the National Football League. But you come in, you're going to be the guy. You got Blake Jarwin there. You got Swain there. I don't know.
I really, really
I don't know.
We finally got a season where Zeke got
odd.
Bad targets, and I really hope that Witten coming back doesn't
not
be fed.
It was odd.
Yeah.
Well, that leads us to the tight end position, and I looked at the tight ends. I mean, there aren't any really names that really just blow you away there, but I picked a couple. I mean, Jared Cook, who surprised all of us last year by having the breakout season that I think people predicted for him like a decade ago.
Yeah, like when he was at the St. Louis Rams.
You know, like, he finally put it together. I mean, I guess the question is, like, is this something he can repeat, or was this just like a once in a lifetime?
I don't know.
Was this your magical season here, Fabs?
I think it was, but where is he going? You know, that's the big question. The Raiders had issues at wide receiver all season long with Martavis Bryant and his mess. And, you know, Jordy Nelson was unreliable at best. So there was a lot of opportunities there for Jared Cook, who did become the number one target for Derek Carr on that offense. Now, we'll see what happens. I mean, even if he remains in Oakland, there's talk that the Raiders are in on Antonio Brown. We shall see. But the good thing for Jared Cook from a fantasy perspective is that that position, you know, is coming off maybe one of the worst statistically that we've seen. So he's still going to end up being a tight end one as long as he ends up on a team where he is the number one option at that position. And if he stayed in Oakland, that would be the case.
The other one, Tyler Eifert, who his talent is undeniable.
I feel bad for that dude. I mean, he just can't stay.
He just can't stay on the field. And I mean, I think, you know, the situation obviously will matter for him, Graham. But I think. People are going to probably stay away from him, because why would I spend a draft pick on a guy that I'm not sure I can get more than, you know, 8 games out of in any given season?
Yeah, he's going to get obviously just a 1-year prove it deal and hope he can stay healthy. The ankle injury last year was just a total freak thing, but I mean, there's no way he can be anywhere close to peak.
Not at this point.
I mean, not at this point. He's dealt with everything under the sun at this point.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't know. The other tight ends, it was like, you know, Austin Seferian Jenkins was there.
I think like every Bengals tight end is a free agent.
Dwayne. Yeah. I think CJ Uzomah is a free agent.
Croft as well.
You know, Dwayne Allen is a free agent, although it looks like he may be trying to go back to the Patriots.
Remember when Dwayne Allen was like a thing?
He was
fantasy,
a thing.
He had like 8 touchdowns.
He was a thing. And then Jack Doyle came and made him not a thing anymore.
And then Eric Ebron came in and made Jack Doyle not a thing.
So I don't know. The tight end position is I don't know. I mean, we're praying that, you know, we get a healthy season out of Hunter Henry, that Delanie Walker comes
back. OJ Howard got to stay healthy.
You know, hey, Noah Fant maybe comes in, gets drafted by somebody. In fact, I saw recently, I think in his latest mock, Daniel Jeremiah has Noah Fant going to the Packers, which would be interesting.
Ooh.
Maybe he made the comparison that he would be a younger Jimmy Graham.
Noah Fant hopefully will go at some point in the late first round, and anyone back there I'll be thrilled with.
There you go. So you go. There's the free agency again. Free agency frenzy starts on NFL Network Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Check that out. And again, NFL Fantasy Live, our free agency special, is on Monday, March 18th. All right. Now for the real part of the show.
Ho-ho!
In case you hadn't seen.
Eddie, I wish we had the music and could play it.
I think we would probably
would
get...
Oh, I'd be so excited.
Do you think the HBO overlords would be pretty pissed about that?
I think they would come down on us.
HBO's got some issues of their own right now because the Jackson family, I believe, is suing them for that whole...
Oh, they're not worried about it.
I've watched one part. Did you watch any of that?
I have not yet.
I watched the first one. Dude, it's disturbing. I mean, like, I don't know what's true and what's not true, but it was disturbing.
Yeah, I haven't watched
it. To say the least.
But what was not disturbing? That GOT trailer.
Oh,
The Game of Thrones trailer came out. That was kind of what the first thing I saw when I logged onto the internet yesterday morning and was like, yep, here we go.
How many times did you watch it?
I've watched it 3 times.
Yeah.
So, yes, the final season begins April 14th.
The
final season, was it 6 episodes? I think each episode is going to be like
90 minutes.
Something like that. Yeah. In fact, if you hadn't heard, the final battle, whatever they're calling it, was apparently brutal to shoot. Like, all the actors involved were like, yeah, this is like the worst thing we've ever had to shoot.
Oh my gosh.
We think it's going to look amazing, but we don't ever want to have to do an experience like that ever again because it was just so rough to do. But now that we're getting to the end and we're going to find out who wins the Game of Thrones, I wanted to get everybody's kind of bold predictions for what happens in this thing. I mean, you know, I know you said you think Jaime Lannister is going to do away with Cersei, which I don't know if it's a bold prediction.
That's not
I feel
bold.
Like that's, you know, that's yeah. the thing that almost certainly seems to.
Yeah, I mean, that's not bold at all. I think the bigger question that everyone has is what's going to happen between Jon Snow and the Khaleesi.
Yeah. No, I think we know what's going to happen.
Well, outside of that, is there going to be a child here? Because I know that there's been talk that she can't have children now, but who knows? I mean, Jon Snow got resurrected from the dead.
Yeah,
anything's possible.
They left that completely open by the way.
That would be like a full-blooded Targaryen, basically, right? That would end up taking over the throne. Does John decide, you know what, and this is the kind of dude that his character is, I don't need to be the ruler. I'm going to go to Winterfell. I'm going to rule over Winterfell, where my father, who's not really my father, but my father, Ned Stark, ruled, and maybe he does that. Does the Khaleesi win the Game of Thrones? I mean, that to me would be the most unbold prediction of all time when it comes to Game of Thrones, right? Because that's where it all kind of seems to be going.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the end that's not all that.
No, it's not. It's not. But what do we want to see? We want to see the Hound against his brother.
Well, that has to happen.
That's going
to
happen.
We have to have the Clegane Bowl.
Which right?
There'll be Clegane Bowl.
If you watch the trailer and you have Arya was running for her life in the beginning of it. Is she subject to maybe be one of the characters that ends up perishing in this?
I don't think she's allowed to die. She's one of the few that George R. R. Martin's wife said in the beginning that you could write this book, do whatever you want with it, but she cannot be killed.
His wife is
like a known thing.
She's also no
happy
one.
Happy wife, happy
she's,
life.
Right. She's also no one, and you can't kill no one.
Good point.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
That is a good point.
That's who I think might be the one to kill Cersei.
Is Arya. Because
Jaime's
she's on the list.
Wearing Jaime's face. That's what I think is going to happen.
Interesting.
That is interesting.
I don't think Jaime will get full redemption. I think he's going to die like a... almost like a tragic hero, but not entirely because the Game of Thrones itself is not a nice story. So no one gets full redemption.
Based on the prophecy, then it would be Tyrion who kills Cersei.
No, I think right? that it's...
Because
no,
it's got to be her brother.
But I think it's wearing the face of the brother, I think, takes the place of it.
By the way, we probably should have started this segment with spoiler alert. Yeah. But whatever.
It was a long
if you haven't watched it at this point...
you probably turned the pod off, true.
So...
I can give my quick predictions. I think that that Sansa ends up on the throne. I think you could see with her training, like how she her upbringing and how she always wanted that seat, and then she goes through.
Arguably
some of the worst tragic stuff in the whole story, mm-hmm. and then her like, but she was been smart the whole time. She learned from Cersei. She learned from everyone she watched. I think Tyrion becomes her hand of the king. I think he lives. I think because they did have a previous relationship, but he was one person to not take advantage of her, and actually is one of the few, I guess, good-hearted people in the story. And then I believe that Jon just becomes like Warden of the North, similar to what Ned Stark was before. Obviously, he went down. I think because I don't think Jon wants anything to do with.
I think either that happens or Jon dies.
I don't think Jon dies.
I don't think Jon dies either. You never know.
They've already done that.
Yeah, they've already done that. You never know.
I
mean, he's been stabbed.
Daenerys dies?
Oh, yeah.
George R. R. Martin said it's not going to be a happy ending. She's going down.
I think she dies.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Jon has already been killed basically four times in the show.
Like, yeah.
Well, I mean, the other dude died how many times throughout the course of the series? And he just keeps coming back.
So here's the thing. I think it ends up, because you mentioned Sansa kind of, you know, having worked her way there, she is still married to Tyrion Lannister, by the way.
Yeah.
That's how I think Tyrion ends up on the throne, because Sansa somehow wins this whole thing, and it's like, oh, by the way.
Do you remember?
By the way. Yeah. You know, we're still married.
One thing I want to know, just in conclusion with the show, is how is who is the Night King, and how are their ranks delegated?
I think
how do you move up through the ranks?
They kind of alluded to who it was. It was like an old Stark one of the first men. And
yes.
Then the Children of the Forest captured him and like stabbed him with that, and he became what that is.
Right, right. That's how the White Walkers are created.
Sure, yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, so that I don't know. I'm still hung up on the Night King's his accuracy from the pocket when he
dude
taking down a dragon there.
I mean, if Blake Bortles was that accurate, he'd be playing for the Jaguars.
Right, still be around.
Do you think that Jon has to be the one to fight him, or do you think that maybe Jaime?
Oh, it's gotta be Jon.
Jaime could be the King Slayer again and actually do a good deed. I think he
or Jaime goes down trying to kill him.
I think also that's true.
Yeah.
Damn, Eddie, you should be writing on the show.
Eddie has read all the books.
Yeah. So. I would think out of the four of us, you are the expert here.
Yeah.
So
I've noticed the show and now the writers and George himself, they've done a really good job of not just giving you. It's never the easy guess.
Well, then how do you feel that? Obviously, the last couple of seasons they've gone away from the books.
Yeah.
I guess George R. R. Martin has no. I mean, he has no reason to really write the final book.
Yeah.
I mean, how
I
do
hope
you
he does?
How do you think that they've done in terms of scripting? Because I've seen some complaints that some of the scripting has gone downhill.
Yeah, I think some of the stuff that in the books, and it's not, you could argue it's not ultra major things that have changed, but there are some aspects of the book that if they continued out in the show, a lot of the fans would be like, that's pretty awesome. But then it becomes in the whole thing of like, well, you have to introduce a lot more characters. And then that's in real life terms, more salary, you know, more budget for these people. And we all know the issues that HBO had with the show with the budget early on. And it just makes it almost impossible to show in an hour long episode. So some stuff was just not really feasible. And that does change the outcome of like what was changed from the print to the screen.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, they obviously, we started with this huge character base, and now they've had to condense.
they've combined certain aspects of multiple characters to one person. Yeah, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
It has happened a lot in the show specifically, which is why there are some other really cool things like North of the Wall that have happened, more like a lot of Winterfell stuff, because they kind of shifted away from Winterfell in the last few seasons, and obviously now we saw in the trailer that they come back to Winterfell. There's a scene with Jaime.
Would think that's going to be where the final battle is, right?
At Winterfell? Ultimately it comes back, yeah, but there are a lot more, I guess, I don't know, for lack of a better term, cool stuff that goes on while Winterfell has been like kind of ransacked, that happens in the books. I think some of that stuff the fan base would love, but it's very, very hard to show that in the show, despite even this season being feature length, like Marcus said before.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's going to be interesting. I'm sure we will talk plenty about it. Who knows? This may have to be a weekly segment on the pod once we get to the season starting April 14th, man. So it's just about a month away before the final season of Game of Thrones starts. So yeah, I don't know. This will, you know, we will dive back in.
Is it? Do you think this is like the most, because it's been forever since the last season? I actually have to go back and watch the last season here in the next few weeks. But is this the most anticipated final season of any television show?
I don't think anything is close to this.
It's got to be.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'm struggling to come up with one.
It's got
to
be.
One thing I always come back to is, like, I can understand if you're not super into like the mystical stuff of Game of Thrones, but at the very least, you have to appreciate just how great the character storytelling is.
Sure.
Their budget and all the action. We may never get a show like this ever again with this budget and this hype.
Nope.
With this character development, with this suspense.
Sure.
At the very least, you've got to be able to
respect that. It was a very political type show early on, too. It's all it really was a race for power.
Yeah.
And the storytelling was so good and the character development was so good. That's what really hooked people. The whole dragon and Night King stuff was very late. I mean, yeah, they hinted at those things, but that was like very later on. It was still more of a mystery of like, hey, what's north of the wall? What's going on here? But really what it was back in the earlier seasons was who's going to kill who for that claim to the throne or to be in like the, you know, the winner's circle of that. That's, I think, what really sucked most of the crowd in. So I think people who say, oh, I don't like dragons, like, well, you're missing the entire point of the show.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So
but let me ask you one more question there, Mr. Expert. What happens with the dragons?
Because Rhaegal, I think that was the one really, really important part of the trailer, to dive back into more of the trailer specifically, was when the two dragons were down and Jon was able to approach one being his father, Rhaegal.
Right.
So he's on his father's named after a dragon. I think that's a telltale sign that Jon obviously is part Targaryen, which is a cool little tidbit.
Yeah, they dropped that too earlier. I can't remember. Was it season 6 or 7 where Jon walked up? It was season 7, early season 7.
Yeah.
Jon walked up to the dragon.
But I think the dragon laying down, it's like if he actually, I think the minute we see him riding one and being one of the riders of the dragons would be
That's gonna happen.
A really special moment. But that's gonna be a big deal in the show.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. All right. That's a good start.
Man, I can't wait.
Here we go. It's going to come in, like I said, just a little more than a month. All right, that's it. We're done. We appreciate you, as always, listening. You know how this goes. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, you know, we never really grow up. We just learn how to behave in public. We'll see you next week.